Good afternoon and welcome to the program. My name is Jerry Boyer and you're listening to American Entrepreneur Radio on 1360 WMNY. But we're not really talking about American entrepreneurship at the moment. We're talking about Asian entrepreneurship. As you know, if you're a listener to this program, when I'm here at this microphone, I like to talk to you about the rest of the world. The United States was for many generations the freest country in the world and therefore undoubtedly the best place to invest. It isn't the freest nation in the world anymore, and it hasn't been for some time, actually. And as a lot of the world has moved towards freedom, the United States has moved away from freedom, which means you as an entrepreneur or an investor or a business manager need to take that into account when you're making decisions about where to start businesses, where to expand businesses, and what businesses to invest in. So I've asked Peter Wong to be with us. Peter is with the Lion Rock Institute, which is the leading free market educational foundation. Think tank is what we call them here in the United States, in Hong Kong, which is by a number of measures the nation with the freest economy in the world. Peter, welcome to American Entrepreneur Radio.
Hello.
It's great to have you. I've been reading the material from the Lion Rock Institute. By the way, what's that named after? What's Lion Rock? What does that refer to?
Lion Rock is a mountain, lies between, you know, Hong Kong. There are three parts in Hong Kong, you know, the Hong Kong Island, Kowloon, and the New Territories. And Lion Rock is a mountain, lies between Kowloon and the New Territories. And I think back in 30 years ago, we have an immigration policy called a touch-based system, you know, like baseball, okay?
Yes, yes.
So refugees from the north, you know, when they swim and try to get into Hong Kong, you know, first they would land to the New Territories, the most northern part of Hong Kong. But they wouldn't get their residency until they cross Lion Rock and enter the city center or CBD or downtown, whatever we call it, when they pass Lion Rock.
Then they're free.
So I think that is a very strong symbolic meaning that, you know, after you pass Lion Rock, you get the freedom, you get away from control of the state, something like that. So that's why, and also because after they enter Hong Kong and get the residency here, many of them, they resided around the base of Lion Rock. And that's how, you know, they work hard. They didn't look for welfare from the state. You know, the only thing they were looking for at that time is, you know, you leave me alone. They don't want to the state to get, you know, to take care of their welfare. So and because of this, I think people just work hard at that time.
Yes.
And then Hong Kong, the miracle, the economic miracle, was built by the spirit like that. You know, people don't look for welfare. People just want to make the living by themselves.
So I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Please.
Yeah, it's okay. It's okay.
So Lion Rock is in some sense the symbolic equivalent of Ellis Island and the Statue of Liberty in the United States. It's where the yearning masses, where the masses, huddled masses yearning to breathe free, come and first touch. Fascinating. Well, thank you for telling me that. It's actually kind of a beautiful image. So they obviously get a lot freer when they come there. Do you agree that is Hong Kong the freest economy in the world? I think the Index of Economic Freedom from the Heritage Foundation says it is. And I think Fraser Institute, Economic Freedom of the World, says the same thing. My memory right in that? Do you agree with that? Okay.
Well, I think we are still the freest, given, you know, the rest of the world. You know, the governments are taking away freedom from the people, especially after the financial crisis back in 2008. So I believe we are still the top is because of others are doing worse. You know, you still witness, you know, the government in Hong Kong, they intervene into our life more But you know, when you compare the rest of the world, there is still a sanity for our government. So we are still on the top, you know, in the sense.
I see. Well, we're grading on a curve, in essence. It's a in a ranking system, you're a very free country. But I think what you're saying is, but not free enough.
Well,
not as free as you'd like to be.
We could have done better. You know, there is a fallacy here in Hong Kong. You know, the government officials here, they said, oh, look at the West, look at the advanced economy, you know, for example, because they all have minimum wage. So we should also have one because they have antitrust law or competition law, which is called, that's how they call it in Europe. So we should also have one. We should have a law to regulate competition. So, but, you know, very often the Lion Rock Institute come out and say, hey, yes, you know, the West used to be great, but, you know, look at Europe, especially Europe. And do you really want to, you know, to take their policies and implement it in Hong Kong? So, there are things, you know, like this going on in Hong Kong.
Why is Hong Kong so much freer than the West? I mean, Hong Kong was for a long time a British colony, but it seems to have been freer than Britain is when it was a colony of Britain. So what's the historical basis of this unusual commitment to a high level of freedom?
I would say, Hong Kong, you know, is blasted or was blasted. That we were a colony at that time that, you know, the colonists, you know, they did not really care the welfare of local people. So we did not end up a welfare state. It's because the colonists here, I don't think they, because they did not care about votes at that time. So pretty much, and you think about the history of Hong Kong, we were considered a trading port or a stepping stone for the British people to do trade with China at that time. And I think many of those British people, they did not have a long-term planning for Hong Kong.
So you're free through benign neglect.
Yes, you're just, exactly.
Yeah, they didn't try to help you. Fascinating. All right, let's hold that thought. I need to go to a break and we'll be right back. I'm talking with Peter Wong from the Lion Rock Institute, which is the most prominent free market think tank in Hong Kong, which is the freest economy in the world. And as investors and entrepreneurs, you should be thinking about investing and doing business there for that reason in particular. Anyway, I'm Jerry Boyer. You're listening to American Entrepreneur Radio. And we'll be right back. Welcome back to the program. My name is Jerry Boyer. This is American Entrepreneur Radio on 1360 WMNY. My guest is Peter Wong from the Lion Rock Institute, a free market think tank in Hong Kong. Peter, you made a point in the first segment that Hong Kong is the freest nation in the world according to most measures, economically freest nation in the world according to most measures, but that's partly is because the rest of the world has been moving away from freedom. Where are you trending right now? Is Hong Kong, as of the state of things today, is Hong Kong becoming more free, less free, or is it neutral movement on the issue of economic freedom?
I think we are getting less free. I think it's just like central banks. I don't know whether you're a fan of gold standard or not, but
yes.
when one central bank start printing money, well, especially like the Fed, when the Fed is printing money, then the other central bank would follow. The only difference is maybe Bundesbank print the least. You know what I mean? So
yes.
So I mean, you know, Hong Kong, for me, even we are still the freest economy. But for myself, I'm looking for, you know, big nations like the United States getting back some sanity because, you know, after all, you know, it's like, you know, the United States, if you say you know, it's like a sun. It's like the sun. Then we are like the small planet around it. And at the end of the day, we would be, you know, destroyed if the sun, run into a self-destruction process. You know what I mean?
I do. So yeah, that's a good analogy. Thank you. Yeah. Let's continue. Let's run with that analogy. It's hard for the world to prosper if the United States is not prospering. And the United States doesn't prosper well unless it's economically free. So there is a dependency, not like welfare dependency, but there's an interdependency factor. So if you're a very free country, but being a very free country does not shield you fully from the effects of bad central bank policy, boom and bust cycles in other nations, because you still export to us, there's still services. Freedom maybe makes you more adaptable in a global recession, but even very free countries still suffer from global recessions if they're small.
Exactly. Well, just look at Switzerland. You know, when the euro is getting into a self-destruction process, the SMB, instead of getting away from Europe, is to pay their currency, the yes. Swiss franc, yes. to euro.
Yes,
and,
yes.
Also, you know, like big nations like United States or, you know, in Europe, like Germany, they like to sometimes, you know, when they end up become uncompetitive because their own stupid policies, you know, like tax rate becoming too high. For example, like the Germans, they would always like to control others' jurisdictions' tax policy. For
yes,
example, they
yes.
always look for the Irish people, the Irish government, to raise their corporate tax.
Right, and they call it tax harmonization.
Yes, because they are uncompetitive. So
yes.
they would like other nations to become less uncompetitive. So
yes.
we will be influenced by the big nations.
I see. People refer to the idea of tax arbitrage. So if everyone's taxes are going up, your taxes can go up too, because you can still be the best. You can still have the lowest taxes. Let's go into this a little bit further. You're talking about the sun, right? You know, planets revolve around the sun. Of course, in the world, it's almost like we have three suns, right? There's
okay.
there's an economy that sort of circles around the United States. There's an economy that sort of circles around Europe, largely Germany. And in the East, there's an economy that I think largely circulates around China. First of all, do you agree with that? It's not really a single sun solar system, right? Isn't it kind of a three solar system? Or are you more dependent on the United States than you are on China?
Well, I would say we are revolving around China. You are right. But, you know, I think now the balance is breaking down because, you know, the sun right over Europe is falling down. So
you're more dependent on China, the more the West falters.
Well, yeah. Well, since the handover, especially after China has joined the WTO, you know, after all, it's now the second biggest economy, and we are right next to the second biggest economy. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, pretty much, we rely pretty much on China. But, you know, different solar system, they also interact with each other.
Yes.
You know, when the biggest solar system in the West is doing something insane, like printing money like crazy.
Yes.
We will also be affected.
Yeah, and I suppose historically the Hong Kong dollar is pegged to the US dollar. Is that, am I right in remembering that?
Oh, yes. We have been pegged to the US dollar since 1983.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
At that time, Paul Volcker was the Fed chairman, and we did not expect that he end up become Ben Bernanke.
Well,
remember, Paul Volcker, he raised the interest rate to double digit at that time.
Yes,
to
did.
Defend the purchasing power of the currency, but now you have quantitative easing in the States.
I'm well aware of it and terrified of it. It's one of the reasons why I'm doing so much programming about investing globally, because of the decline of the dollar. So I suppose, to make the analogy a little more complicated, in terms of currency, you sort of revolve around the sun of the United States. But in terms of trade relations, you're probably more revolving around the China growth story.
Exactly.
Okay. All right, good. So one of the things I've been trying to understand in looking at Asia, because a lot of the really free countries in the world are in your part of the world, Hong Kong, Singapore, Taiwan, not quite as free as you in Singapore, but still a fairly free country. Australia is a fairly free country. And in terms of the strategy of investing in freer countries, which is a strategy I pursue, one of the things I'm trying to understand is how much of a risk there is if you're revolving around countries that aren't that free. If China, which is, I think, number 134 on the Index of Economic Freedom, is not as free and therefore somewhat more vulnerable, then how much are you protected by being a free country if there's, say, a downturn in the Chinese economy? Does freedom give you the agility to shield yourself from that interdependence in part, very little, a lot? How much does freedom matter for a small country that's doing a lot of trading with a big country that maybe isn't so free?
If you say about, trade, I don't know. I think if China is going to collapse, because what we all know about the bubble in China, but I don't think anyone could be, could make himself entirely unaffected. But, individually, we could, as a free country, we can always move our money around the world. I think that's all we can do. But when you're going back to, China, when you said, China ranked, in the freedom index, like 130-something, right?
Right.
I think, and people would wonder why China, given the is economically unfree, why would it do so well economically in the past 30 years? I think it was due to, because China once was very unfree 30 years ago.
Yes.
And when, from a full communist state to, now a semi free market, semi planned economy, even this change, you gain a lot of dividend, from entire unfree to somehow free country.
Yes.
And you get the dividend already and for 30 years.
Yes.
So, So people, they don't understand. Sometimes they have a fallacy thinking that, China, because, you have the central government, because they direct the economy, they plan how the economy moves, so that's why they are doing so good. No. If you think about the past, it was because the Chinese government, returned some freedom to the people, and now we are enjoying the dividend.
Yeah, it's a very good point. And I've done a lot of work on looking at correlations between economic freedom and growth. And what you're pointing out is borne out by the data, that it is the change in the level of freedom that is the most powerful predictor of growth. It's not the level of freedom, but it's the change. If you're getting freer, there is a strong probability that you'll get more prosperous. If you're the United States and you're the 10th most free country in the world and you go from 10th to 12th, well, 12th from the top is still pretty good, but actually you'll see strong economic contraction. So it's are you moving towards freedom or moving away from freedom? It's a dynamic kind of model as opposed to just a level. And China's gotten a lot freer in the past 30 years, and for that reason it's grown. And I think you're right to critique Thomas Friedman and others who have talked about the China model as a model that we should go you know, that we should go for? Well, we should go for the China model in the sense of China got a lot freer in the past 30 years, and we ought to get a lot freer in the next 30 years. All right, we're talking with Peter Wong from the Lion Rock Institute in Hong Kong. Peter, can you hold on? We just do another segment. Let's go to a quick break, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to the program. My name is Jerry Boyer. I'm talking with Peter Wong from the Lion Rock Institute, which is in Hong Kong. This is the leading free market think tank in Hong Kong. Think of the Allegheny Institute. If any of you listening to remember the Allegheny Institute, an organization that I founded, free market think tank. Well, this is like that, only for Hong Kong rather than for this part of the world where we're listening right now. Peter, you were making the point before that it's the trend towards freedom probably that matters more than how free you are. I want to kind of come back to this idea of freedom allowing you to be more agile. Let's just talk a little bit about Hong Kong, sort of the specifics. How high are what's the capital gains tax rate in Hong Kong?
No, we do not have a capital gain tax.
0%. Okay.
You're right.
What's the income tax? What's the top income tax rate?
The standard rate is 15%. 15.
Wow. Do you happen to know the corporate tax rate?
Corporate tax rate is, I can't remember, but it is around 16 or 16.5.
Now, this is just outstanding compared to a lot of the rest of the world. And it's very good compared to the United States, where our capital gains tax rate is 15% and scheduled to go up to roughly 40% at the end of next year, if nothing changes, where our top income tax rate is 35% and scheduled to go up to 40% at the end of next year, and where our top capital, our top corporate rate is, I believe, 35%. So I can understand why capital would be flowing to Hong Kong. Does that capital help you grow more? It's obviously good for the businesses that can get those high tax rates. Does it give you dynamism and growth? More capital means a lower cost of capital, which presumably means more economic growth for you.
We have been witnessing a lot of hedge funds and banks moving their headquarters to Hong Kong, and actually HSBC. Well, which used to be a Hong Kong bank, and because of the handover problem at that time, they moved their headquarters back to the UK, to London. But I think now they're considering moving back their office to Hong Kong.
If there were a regional economic crisis, let's say you have a downturn in China, that would hurt the Hong Kong economy in some sense, because you're trade dependent. But on the other hand, it seems like there would be something that would help Hong Kong, and that there would be a flight of capital to freer places. That when you have an economic downturn, you usually have a move to the left in terms of policy. Tax rates go up, regulations go up. There's a tendency to blame the business sector for recessions, which actually are caused by government monetary policy, but the private sector is scapegoated. So do you get another effect, a kind of a capital refugee effect, when you have a financial crisis? I mean, I assume we had a financial crisis in the United States, 2007, 2008. We highly regulated markets. I assume that a lot of capital, because of that, moved from here to where you are. So I wonder if that freedom doesn't give you more ability to be able to respond to downturns from larger economies.
Well, it's true that the housing price in here, when compared to 2000, early 2008, I think the housing price is up by 20 or 30% compared to the crash last time.
I see.
Our housing price is making a record high, implying that, yes, the capital flight phenomena is happening here. But it also depends on the crash, outside Hong Kong. If the speed of the crash happens too quickly, then you know, we wouldn't be benefit from the flight of capital. You know, the problem is, but if, for example, well, I'm a fan of, you know, creative destruction, that I believe if the West in 2008, the government did not intervene the market too much, then I think the economy of the West should have already rebounded.
Yes.
And then so that's why Hong Kong wouldn't benefit from, you know, the flight of capital.
I see. If we had handled it wisely with a minimum of government intervention, that would have been our gain and your loss. But instead, we invoked on a process of what some people call recession revenge. We blamed Wall Street. We blamed banks. We blamed the private sector. And so we're driving capital from here to where you are.
Yeah, when you kick the can down the road, then you give the time to the to wealthy people in the West, and so that they have the time to move capital to Hong Kong. But if you don't intervene and just let the economy plummet, and at a certain point, there will be a rebound, and we wouldn't be benefit from the flight of capital.
I see. So in terms of international tax competition, what's to the advantage of the free countries is a long process of reallocation of capital. Otherwise, you might have sudden infusions of Western capital leading to housing bubbles. You have the situation that Switzerland had, for example. So the disruption, a crisis, is not necessarily that good for you, because if money is flying away from Europe towards Hong Kong, that might cause a sudden appreciation of the Hong Kong dollar and all sorts of other problems for you.
Or housing price.
Or
which
housing
also
price.
Would lead to local, you know, people keep complaining they cannot afford a house in here. You know, it will affect us. Like, even we somehow, we somehow benefit from the flight of capital. But there is always people, there are always people that wouldn't be benefit, and they would be affected by the flight of capital because of, you know, inflation in housing other services.
Yes. Well, let's take the possibility for a moment that this is not just an aberration, that in fact the United States is in a long-term movement away from economic freedom, and that Europe is continuing its long-term movement away from economic freedom, and that therefore we're in it's not a temporary crisis. I'm just running this scenario. I'm not saying it's my base case that it necessarily will happen. I suppose what happens is free countries around the world adapt. You adapt to a world in which the sun, the American sun, is not shining as brightly as it used to. And you start consuming more of your own production, and the Asian economies become more consumer economies. And because you're free and agile, you adapt to that world and you move on, and you sort of get over us. You get over the need for the United States to be the sun that sort of, you know, shines on all the other countries in the world. What do you think about that?
Well, it depends on, I don't know, sometimes I feel pessimistic about, you know, we have been working hard to export, you know, the Hong Kong model.
Yes.
To the rest of the world. And we did, actually, I think 30 years ago, when Ronald Reagan, he took office.
He talked
actually,
about Hong
Kong. I think he listened to Milton Friedman and learned something from Hong Kong, the low-tax policy.
Yeah, Milton Friedman started off his special, Free to Choose, from Hong Kong.
Yeah, but you know, I'm worrying whether the other another Ronald Reagan would happen, or would reappear again.
Well, we can hope and we can pray, but you, as Reagan said, trust but verify. I'll believe I see another Reagan when he's cut the taxes and stabilized the dollar and all the rest of it. They all say I want to be Reagan. All the Republicans say I'm the next Reagan, but we'll see. Well, this is The Hong Kong model, how is it doing? How well is that freedom model doing in the Asian region? I mean, you're moving a little bit away from freedom, although the freest country in the world. How about Singapore? How about Taiwan, Malaysia, Thailand? What's the general trend in those countries?
Well, one thing you may want to notice is, you know, the common point about the jurisdiction that you just mentioned. We are all small and open economies, you know, especially like, you know, like Singapore, Dubai, or Hong Kong, we are city-states.
Yes.
And when you are a city-state, sometimes, just think about it, you cannot be too, you cannot be like China 30 years ago. You just close your door and don't do business with other countries. Right. Because you are so small and you have to rely on imports and exports. So because of that, city-states, they are easier to remain free rather than big nations. For example, you're at the United States. You guys can always shut the door not to do business with the rest of the world, with high tariffs, with, you know, all sorts of stupid policies. But the Americans, they can still survive.
I see. So, protectionism is not an option for you. It would be suicide. Right.
Yes, exactly.
And as von Mises says in Omnipotent Government, if you don't have protectionism, it's hard to have an interventionist state, because if you're in a global competition, then you have to be competitive. Protectionism goes together with internal intervention, and a free flow of capital across and goods across borders goes together with a non-interventionist state internally. So the one almost implies the other.
Exactly.
I see. Well, fascinating. Peter, I want to thank you for taking the time to be with us. And if somebody wanted to learn more about the Lion Rock Institute, how could they learn more about you?
Go to our website, lionrockinstitute.org. And, you know, I always look forward meet and interact with friends from abroad. So, and as I said, I always would love to export the Hong Kong model. Though I know Hong Kong is a city-state, and maybe United States is too big to adopt everything from us. But, I mean, it's always helpful for us to interact and learn from each other.
Right. But imagine a world where the United States was as free as Hong Kong. Just imagine the level of prosperity on planet Earth, if the largest economy in the world had a 0% capital gains tax rate, a 15% top income tax rate, and a 16.5% top corporate tax rate, the global GDP impact of that, the prosperity of, you know, we'd be curing cancer and you would have bases on the moon and, lifespans around the world would be growing. I mean, it would be just a miracle of global prosperity. So I'm not going to give up on that dream. That's something worth hoping for and worth praying for. Peter Wong, thanks so much for taking time to be with us today on American Entrepreneur Radio.
Thank you.
I'm Jerry Boyer. Thanks for joining us.